The Life of Gustavus Adolphus. Gustavus Adolphus and Maria, Part 3. It was at Dirschau in Prussia toward the end of August 1627. There Gustav Adolphus lay very sick from a dangerous musket ball wound to his shoulder. Not far away lay the Polish camp at which Sigismund as Windislaw had recently arrived on a tour of inspection. The High Admiral Karl Carlson Gillenheim, who had been ordered to leave the fleet and wait upon the king, found him stretched on his bed. While he was speaking with him, Axel Oxenstierna came in with the news. Among other things, he had intercepted a Polish discourse alleged to have been pronounced at the table by King Sigismund. If anything were to happen to Gustavus Adolphus, to whom would the crown of Sweden fall? In view of that fact, he refused to bestow it on Sigismund. Sigismund had essayed to answer that question, that perhaps he would give it to his nephew, end of quote. And Gillenheim, who was the narrator of this scene, graphically continued. Thereupon, after considering a little, looking from me to the Chancellor and back again, His Majesty made answer to the Chancellor. Yes, I do not know where we will find a better. Immediately afterwards, the Chancellor changed the subject, and nothing more was said of it. Gillenheim's account is in his own hand. It is addressed to Queen Christina. It was written sometime in the latter half of the decade of 1640 to 1650. Probably the Queen would never have seen it if the old admiral had not been guilty of a serious lapse of memory. For although he could recall these circumstances to mind with such particularity that the occasion can be dated to within a week, he labored under the misapprehension that Christina had not been born at the time the conversation took place. The Queen was not the only person to whom he confided this reminiscence. The same setting, same reflection on the part of Sigismund, and nearly the same answer by Gustavus Adolphus. Who else? They were incorporated in a report of the trial of Massena for high treason in 1651, on which occasion Gillenheim, by this time dead, was cited as the source of the story. Axel Oxenstierna's view of Gustavus Adolphus's attitude toward his Palatine relations at this time was rather different. He, too, has a story of a conversation at the time of the king's illness at Dirschau in 1627, but it was a private conversation between the king and himself. Gustav Adolphus that one day earnestly entreated Oxenstierna to tell him, without equivocation, whom he thought the estates would take as king after his death. The chancellor, who had first sought to parry the question, was at last constrained to answer, and he named Johann Casimir, or in the event of his dying before the king, his son Carl Gustav. Thereupon the king prayed to God to turn the chancellor and the estates from such a course. You may be certain of this, that if you crown either of them your king one day, you will regret it the next. For the accuracy of these reports, we have the witness of the secretary, who in 1649 called upon Oxenstierna at the queen's orders to obtain his signature to the instrument dealing with Carl Gustav's succession, and made notes of his conversation immediately afterwards. And if the source may be possibly to be a little tainted, there are other diktats of Oxenstierna preserved in the reports of the council meetings, which go at least to show that his views differed from Gillenheim's. The late king never entertained such an idea, he said on one occasion, with obvious reference to this controversy. How far the versions of the admiral and the chancellor are in the last resort reconcilable can't be discussed. There is no reason why the king should not have expressed himself more freely to the latter than both of them together. In any case, it may be held to be proved that as late as 1627, Christina's succession was considered as to some extent uncertain in spite of the succession agreement. This conclusion is further strengthened by a remarkable circumstance. Christina was born on December the 7th, 1626. In the course of 1627, two meetings with the Reichstag were held, one at the beginning and one at the end of the year. At the latter, arrangements were made to confirm the succession agreement in the female line by a new resolution of the estates. The reason given was that many simple people, among the people of all degree, had not grasped that the provision to right of hereditary princesses to the crown. It was something fundamentally new and strange to the traditional ideas of the Swedish people. Gustavus Adolphus's thoughts often dwelt uneasily on the future that awaited his wife and little Christina. To Axel Oxenstierna, he confessed, quote, "If anything happens to me, my family will merit your pity. not for my sake only, but for many other reasons. They are women folk, the mother lacking in common sense, and the daughter a minor, hopeless if they rule, and dangerous if others come to rule over them. It's December of 1630. End of quote. It's always been a matter of astonishment that it should have for so long postponed his ratification of the form of government which arranged for the organization of the administration after his death. For so long, indeed, that in the end it never received the final approval and signature. One important reason, though possibly not the only one, at once leaps to mind. There could be no doubt that the consideration for Maria Eleonora's feelings held him back. The welfare of the state, with which he never compromised, ruled her out from any influence upon the direction of affairs. To state this openly would probably have involved Gustavus Adolphus in an awkward personal crisis in his relations with his wife. With regard to Christina, his daughter, Gustavus Adolphus, in the last years of his life, kept steadily before him the idea of a new family alliance with the House of Brandenburg. At all events, he was anxious to test the strength and the possibility of such a scheme. The proposal was that the heiress to Sweden would marry the Elector Prince Frederick Wilhelm, later known as the Great Elector, with reference to the possibility that it might offer a smoothing out of the conflicting interests of the two powers. In an indefinite future lay the dream of a great Swedish-German state under a common ruler. The marriage project actually survived Gustavus Adolphus, but the wider scheme of which it was part was unfortunately buried with him. So now we're going to be getting into the man and the monarch as we walk our way through this period of the wars and what have you of Gustavus Adolphus. The sources for this are Gustavus Adolphus versus Wallenstein by Pike, Gustav Adolphus Sweden and the 30 Years' War, 1630-32 by Volk, The Lion of the North by Henty, Gustav Adolphus the Great by Onlund, and Gustav Adolphus and the Rise of Sweden by Roberts, Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 1, Infantry by Brzezinski, Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 2, Cavalry by Brzezinski. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise. If you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.